everybody. Welcome to Michelle is Money Hungry. I'm your host, Michelle Jackson, and I actually have discovered in the travel blogging space something that's a little different than what personal finance people get focused on. It's like the cousin of FIRE, which is financial independence, retire early. I've already told you about my slow FIRE, but Stephanie Perry, who I'm going to be speaking with today, takes it a bit further, and I thought that it would be, of course, my stupid computer chimes when I start introing, but that's okay because I'm going to keep that. I thought that it would be fun to speak with Stephanie about her experience taking a year off. She has a specific phrase for it. Just from our adult lives, it's like an adult gap year, the importance of that for self-care, finances, for life. And I am kind of a huge fan of hers, quietly in the background, watching what she's doing, looking at all her cool pictures. And I think that you will be a fan too, especially if you're kind of trying to figure out how do I get to financial independence, but live my best life at the same time. So hi, Stephanie. If you could briefly introduce yourself and your platform, that would be awesome.
Michelle, I'm so excited to talk to you today. I am Stephanie Perry from Vacarious.com, and Vacarious.com is my website. I also have a YouTube channel where you can find me just under Stephanie Perry. And I help women who are feeling like they need a career break. I help women who are ready to travel more and who don't want to wait until the traditional retirement age to do it. I help them take a career break and see the world on a budget.
I would love to know how this even became a thing for you. Like what happened to make you, because obviously you were your own test subject, right?
Absolutely.
So could you share your personal experience with work and why you needed a break and just what happened?
Let me tell you, I didn't have like a big horror story or anything like that. I just worked in the type of job where I could never get a full week of vacation time.
What'd you do?
I worked in a hospital pharmacy. I was a pharmacy technician. And it was just every time I put in a week's vacation request, they'd be like, okay, we'll give you 2 days or we'll give you 3 days. If you need these other days off, you need to find someone who'll come in and work your shift. And you know, it was just a pain in the butt. Also, around the same time, I took a vacation with my parents. My dad retired pretty young, but my mom retired at 65. And right after she retired, we all took a vacation together. And I could see that the whole idea of waiting for this golden age to start traveling was just a scam. It was a scam. It was a trick of the enemy. There's no way that you feel like doing all the stuff that you want to do in your 60s, 70s, and 80s. I don't want to say it's too late, but it's too late. Your body is not cooperative. You know, your knee hurts, your hip hurts, your back is, you know, iffy. And so I was like, there's got to be another way. There's no way that I'm going to work until I'm, you know, 65 or 70 and then try to go out and see the world and get to know myself and live my life.
So you have this experience. What came next? How did you decide, you know what? They keep screwing me for these 2 day breaks, which honestly is crap. Just thinking about it pisses me off, but we'll get into that later. But what made you think, you know what? I'm just going to take a year off. Just, I need my time.
So the final straw, I think, was I went to Brazil for my birthday. My 40th birthday also coincided with the World Cup, and the U.S. men's team was playing in the World Cup in Brazil.
Oh.
I'm not into soccer at all, like
I
at
would
all.
Be.
Right? So I'm like, this is the perfect time to go. There's going to be parties everywhere, and you know, it's going to be a good time to be there. So I go to Brazil, and I meet all these people who are younger than me, who are staying in Brazil for like extended periods of time, 3 months, 6 months. And I'm like, how are you doing this? And like, oh, you know, I quit my job. until my money runs out, and then I go back to work. And I was like, immediately. I mean, it was like a light bulb moment. I was like, oh, okay, me too. I do the same thing. So that's how it all started. Originally, my plan was just to take a bunch of mini retirements. So that was the first, that's what it looked like at first. Mm-hmm. I came back home from that particular trip. I saved up $14,000 over 15 months and I took off. And when the money ran out, and I'm talking about the money ran out, I was down to 30 something dollars in my account.
Wow.
I spent everything. But it lasted me 12 months. $14,000 lasted me 12 months. I came back home, and by home, I mean my parents let me come live with them, and went back to work. And that was originally what was going to happen. But then I was back at work for a few months. I had like a couple thousand dollars in my pocket, and I was like, I quit again.
So before we go further, I want to talk about a couple of pieces. The first is, how were you able to save the money? What were some of the practical things that you did to get that savings to accumulate in a pretty, I think, reasonable fashion in terms of the timing? And then I want to talk about what your year looked like, and then that $30.
Yeah. My savings plan was just like a sheet of paper and a whiteboard. Mm-hmm. And I just mapped out. I had decided that $40 a day was my budget for the entire year, because that's a super low budget travel figure, right? It's out there in the travel blogging world, $40 a day. And I knew I was going to really inexpensive places. So I knew I needed this $14,000. Half of it, more than $7,000, came from me just working overtime at my job. Yeah, so that was easy. I mean, you know, that was pretty straightforward. I think $2,000 of it came from me cutting off DirecTV. This was back in 2015.
Whoa, are you serious?
I know.
It was that expensive?
I was paying $95 a month, I think.
Oh my God.
I didn't realize what I was paying. You know how you sign up for $50 a month for the first however many months? Well, I had been in the house for 6 or 7 years, and I didn't realize how much I was paying on just cable, just to watch Law and Order and the Golden Girls.
But that's on like regular TV, because so again, money blogger, I have rabbit ears, and I just get it for free.
Yeah.
But I love that you went back and you went through your different budget line items to see what could be let go.
Mm-hmm. Food was another thing.
Okay.
Everybody, you know, when people are telling you to save money, and they always say, stop eating out, cook your own food. That's advice that I would always roll my eyes at, because I'm like, ugh, I hate it, right? I hate
right.
I don't enjoy it. But I did it. And I think that paid for 2 months of travel. I think I got something along the lines of $2,400 savings just from cooking. Yeah. Because I was, every day before work, I would go, we have Wawa. It's a convenience store, but it's...
Wait, what's it called?
It's called Wawa. I'm from Delaware.
Wawa
is the best convenience store ever. You go there, they'll make you a sandwich right there, like a big sub.
Really?
Yes, I love it.
We don't have that in Colorado.
No, you don't.
Like, that doesn't exist.
I feel bad for people who don't have Wawa in their lives. You can go there and they will make you a hot chocolate chip cookie right in the oven. You know how?
Oh my God!
The little oven that most people like, the Subway oven or whatever.
Oh, yummy.
Where they cook the sandwich through. They also put a hot chocolate chip cookie through for them. Oh. So I would go there and I would get breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Wawa on a work day.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I'm talking $15, $20 a day easily. So that was simple. Cut that down to probably $10 a day in food between breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Okay.
So the 20, that paid for about two months of travel. I sold a bunch of stuff. I didn't do a very good job of selling, and I could have done better and gotten more money, but I think that probably paid for at least a month of travel. I didn't do anything especially outrageous. I just took a look at where my money was going beforehand and where I could cut some costs, trim some things down. So I think I misspoke. I think I said that I spent or that I saved $2,000 from cutting DirecTV. That was one, it was like $1,200 or something, $1,100 or $1,200 from cutting DirecTV.
But still, that's a significant amount of money.
Significant. It's more than a month. It was a month in Thailand, you know, chilling on the beach and taking pictures of the sunsets and bathing elephants in the river.
Well, excuse me.
Absolutely.
So, dang. Okay, so I need you to walk through your planning of the trip. So you kind of figured out the money part. What places attracted you and why, and how did you imagine your trip to be?
I felt like this was going to be the chance to do the once in a lifetime things. So I wanted to focus on Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia just really looks beautiful. I had the screensaver pictures on my computer at work. And, you know, it just looks like another world, a place that I wanted to get to. And, you know, a place that I wasn't going to be able to get to if they were only approving me for 3 or 4 days of vacation at a time. Mm. So I focused my trip mostly on that one region. And you know, just by researching on a couple of different websites, I knew that my budget was good. Numbeo.com and NomadList.com are two websites that I did a lot of poking around on. And you can tell what, they'll tell you what things cost, and you can kind of get a feel for how much money you're going to need from place to place. So I started just looking there. There were a lot of travel bloggers out there who were 21-year-olds. They had a lot of good information, but I was nervous about if it applied to me as well. But it turns out, in terms of budget travel, we all pretty much do it the same way. So I just did a lot of Googling until I felt comfortable enough to at least get there. I did a lot more pre-planning than I would probably recommend, because once I actually got into Southeast Asia, my plans pretty much
changed.
Yeah, because some things were more important to me than others after I got there. And I realized I could take it slow. I don't have to hit a city every other day. I have a whole year, and I don't have to feel like I have to see the entire world. I can just see Asia. So I just saw Southeast Asia and Australia, and it was much lower pace than I had originally planned out. But that also helped with the money.
Australia is expensive, because I spent a couple of months there, and I was at a friend's place for part of that. And I was like, this, I loved Australia, but it definitely is not a cheap place.
Crazy expensive. Yeah. It's crazy expensive. That's where I learned how to do some other things that I learned. I learned how to work in exchange for free room and board through Workaway. It's a website that matches up people with volunteers. And it's also where I learned about house sitting, so that I didn't have to come out of pocket with that money.
So you're a Gen Xer, which in my view is not old, because I'm a Gen Xer. You're a Gen Xer traveling the world. I actually, you know what, before I even say this, I want to ask about what was the reaction like in your friend circle as you prepared to do this thing? Like, were you speaking it out loud to make it happen? Were you having conversations with friends? Did you get people who are like, you're nuts, Stephanie, like, why are you doing this? Like, what was that piece like? I know for me and my circle, they're like, let me visit you. Like, they're really easy. So I would never get pushback on any of that, because they're doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, did you have that same experience where they were like, let's do this? Like, where can we meet? So what was the conversation like?
I had mixed reactions. So I had either, that's amazing, I wish I had done that when I was younger, mm-hmm. which was kind of a weird reaction, because these were people who were my same age. But it's just a sign of, you know, it's very American. You only can have fun in these certain age brackets. The rest of your life is dedicated to work and work only.
And death.
Thank you for playing. Yeah. So either it was, oh my gosh, that's amazing, I wish I had done that, or don't go, they're going to kidnap you and sell you into slavery. We'll never
see. Now we live in America, right?
The world is dangerous, right? Everybody's out to get you. Yeah. So there were mixed reactions in the beginning, but I don't know anybody now who still feels like, oh yeah, good for you, but it's really dangerous. I feel like I've done my duty as an ambassador to show people that, you know what, you're going to go out into the world and you're going to love it. You're not going to be as scared as you think you are. Everybody's scared. It's fine to be scared, but it doesn't have to stop you from living and doing the thing that you really want to do.
Where were you when you had that last $30 and you were about to board the plane?
I was in Paris. My cousin Marcy did come to join me. She was the last, you know, the only person who agreed to come and join me. And it was the very end of my trip. And we were staying in a hostel together and we were on two bunk beds. And I said, all right, Marcy, I'm out of money. I said, either I go touch this money in the savings account, you know, either I go touch this money that I said I was not going to touch unless it was an extreme emergency. Or so I guess I did have some money. Okay. So, you know, so I was like, either I touch this money that I said I was not going to touch unless it was a dire emergency, or I go back home. I had the plane. Let's see. I didn't have my ticket. I had maybe 300 euros total. And she said, well, it sounds like you don't want to go home yet. Keep going. Keep going. And I was like, no, Marcy, she's the responsible one. She's a very responsible person. I was like, no, you're supposed to tell me to go home. Keep that little savings and go home. So I did book my one-way trip home. I had enough money to get the bus from New York to Wilmington, Delaware. And my parents actually, I think my parents actually came to pick me up because that was what the $30 was going to do. The $32.
Wow.
Delaware. And my mom and dad were like, no, we'll come to the airport and pick you up. I think that's what happened.
So yeah. Wait, the $300 was your remaining like savings amount, like the amount you weren't going to touch in euros?
No, the $300 was the end of my money for the trip.
Okay. But you did have like a pot of, sorry?
I'm sorry, but I still had to buy the airfare to get back home from Paris too.
But my listeners will definitely ask me about what was your other savings. So what was your other savings? Was it like another 5,000 that you're like, that's just like earmarked for when I go back to the US?
Well, that money was my retirement, my 403B, my hospital retirement account. So I was talking about going into my retirement account and pulling money out so that I could keep traveling. Mm-hmm. But I decided not to do it, even though Marcy did tell me to. So that was a totally separate account, money that I never am supposed to touch, you know,
right.
Money that I don't want to, that's not what this is for.
Right.
So that, yeah. So I did have that pot of money, but it was like totally, I just did not want to touch that money.
Well, I mean, you put a lot of time and energy into accumulating that money. A lot of people in the personal finance space who have the resources to get on people for cashing out their retirements will have very strong opinions on people saying, you know, this is the money that I accumulated and this is what I choose to do with it. I am very neutral because I understand that sometimes that's the most money you have to deal with the situation or the life that you're in now. Like it is your, you earn that money. You decide what you do with that money. It's your money. I'm glad that you didn't, but ultimately, like, I didn't work for that money. So I feel like you felt a little shy about sharing that. But I will say, in my view, like, I'm an empathetic person in terms of what people do with their money and their money decisions. Like, I have no right to make you feel any kind of way about what you choose to do with your money because you worked for it, right? Yeah. So you get back, grown-ass woman, your parents are like, what the hell is this? What did the next leap look like? Like when you decided to go again, how was that next journey different? And how did you prepare?
Once I went back home, I knew there was a change. Like I knew I didn't want to stay back in Delaware where I was, and I didn't want to keep going to the job that I had. So that's when I started working on how do I make money so that I can be more of a digital nomad? How can I make money while I travel? And how can I get some passive income too? So I kind of started working on these things as soon as I got back home. And then the opportunity to go to South Africa jumped into my face. It was just a really good airfare deal. So I was like, well, okay, now is as good a time as any.
How many months was that from the time that you returned?
I want to say 6 months total, but I had only been working for 3 months because it took forever for me to get my, even though the same job hired me back, they make you go through all the rehire process and everything.
Yes.
On my 90-day review where they sit you down and they say,
oh,
okay.
Oh my God, where you're like, bye.
In my 2 week notice.
I can't with you. This is the best story ever. You know what? I there's no shade because companies don't give a crap. Okay.
No, they're not loyal to me.
No, they're not. So you gotta do what's best for you. So I kind of really love that. So you fly to South Africa. Mm-hmm. And what transpired from there? Like you're building a platform, I assume. Mm-hmm. What kinds of things were you doing to earn money digitally?
I started freelance writing. So I have, I majored in English in college and I'm a good writer, but I didn't have any experience actually writing, you know? So I started my freelance writing business and my first paying client was actually a friend of my mom's, somebody I've known since I was a kid. So I started doing that, and then I set up my blog, started blogging, and started doing some of the, there's like a whole list of things that people do while they travel to make money here and there, tutor in English online, mm-hmm. selling stock photography. So I did and still do a little bit of a lot of different things.
What are the top three income earners in your view for your specific business?
For me, total, freelance writing is number one. Mm-hmm. Affiliate income from Amazon and from, so I'm a house sitter and I'm an affiliate for Trusted House Sitters, which is a house sitting service.
Do they pay you out in cash or is it in kind?
No, in cash. So they have a little refer a friend program that is in kind where you just get free months, but they also have a separate affiliate program through AWIN.
Okay. AWIN is actually headquartered here in Colorado. So I know the affiliate like person who's in charge of affiliates. So side note, it's completely random. But anyway, how did you know what affiliates, like I feel like for those of us in the digital space, one of the most complex areas of focus as you build out your business is what works best for your business. You could line up like 100 digital influencers, if you will, and ask how they monetize, and each person's going to say something a little different. So would you be kind enough to walk us through what your process was and what worked and what didn't, like how you figured out what was going to be the thing that worked for you?
It's been a lot of trial and error. In the beginning, my blog was just, hi, I'm Stephanie, and here's where I am now, you know? And so it was difficult to find a way to monetize. And that's how I started making money as an Amazon affiliate, just saying, oh, here's a selfie I took with my phone and my tripod, and here's an affiliate link to the tripod, you know?
Right.
Then as people started asking me more specific questions, I was able to direct the business in a more specific way and then learn how to monetize and come up with specific affiliate programs that'll work. So once I got into house sitting and saw that people responded to house sitting in a really excited way, I was like, okay, well, let's figure out how I can make this a business instead of just a blog post. It really was just putting a bunch of stuff out there from, I have a blog post on how to take a good selfie when you're traveling solo. I have a blog post on 10 tips for budget travel in South Africa. And then when I did the blog post about, I think it was actually the YouTube video about house sitting, that's when I got the response. And that kind of dictated where I was able to go.
Where are you currently now?
Right now I'm in Mexico. I'm house sitting outside of Ajijic. So there's an entire community of retired American and Canadians who have kind of settled into this small town in Mexico called Ajijic. I am actually outside of Ajijic in an even smaller, more remote area, but it's beautiful here. And I'm house sitting for a lady who's back home visiting her family in Massachusetts.
I want to revisit the money again, but I feel like a conversation like this, I would be remiss if I didn't ask the following. What has it been like for you to travel as a woman of color around the world? I've done it. I have very specific experiences. And I think that there might be someone listening to this who is not a woman of color and may be surprised by what your experience is, who is a woman of color and maybe like, wow, like I totally resonate with that. Or maybe I don't. Or maybe they're a Gen Xer, which again, I don't think is old for the love of God. And they're thinking, you know what, I want to do something different. So could you kind of talk about what your experience has been like traveling around, creating this new career and being bold in a way that I think a lot of people are afraid to be?
It's been amazing. It's been really freeing. I'm from the East Coast. I'm from Delaware. It's not like I'm from a place that Delaware was segregated. So I'm not going to say it's not the South or anything, but it's not like I'm from a place where we don't see black and white people together. But being able to leave the United States is the first time that I actually get to experience American privilege. A lot of people, a lot of people, when you leave the United States, they're not so much interested in, you know, are you black? Are you white? Are you brown? But do you have American dollars? Or, you know, do you have Australian dollars? Do you have British pounds? You're going to be treated better. So it's a different type of experience. You get to see what the world is like from a totally different perspective. Also, there are people out there who just have tremendous reverence for black women. I think that in the United States, black women are the workhorse of the economy. You know, we have to make the money, raise the kids, go to school, it's all on our shoulders. A lot of the world does revere black women in a way that, and I'm not talking about dating because men are men all over the place. I'm talking about walking.
I am going to talk about that Tinder article.
I'm just talking about walking the streets as a black woman. There is a level of respect or reverence that we get that you just don't receive in the United States. Mm. It's freeing. I ran into Tiffany. I met a blogger named Tiffany from Tiffany Travels, and we went to Chiang Mai to a restaurant. We're walking down the street, and this black guy pulled past us on a motorbike. And he's like, "What are you guys doing here?" He was so excited to see us. And we were like, you know, he lived in Chiang Mai. He taught English in a school, and then he sang and rapped in bars at night. So we were like, "How do you like it? You know, how do you like actually living here?" And he was like, "I feel so free." And he couldn't stop saying it. He said it like probably 20 times in the conversation. Wow. It's just a different feeling when you get to leave the United States. I'm not saying that these places don't have their own racial and cultural tensions, because they do. But we get to come in as a traveler and not have to, you know, not have to navigate those situations. But it is freeing to be able to walk away from some of the daily microaggressions that you face in the U.S. and just not even have to see them in the rest of the world.
Mm. I do want to talk about your Tinder post. Listeners, this is the best travel advice ever, but actually part of travel is dating. Like I cannot explain to you how many people I've dated abroad. Like it's so easy, actually. The Paris one, I used to live in Paris. So when I saw your comment about Paris, I died laughing. So if you could just share the post that I'm referring to and your travel tip that you learned as a result of dating abroad and using Tinder, I just think it's awesome.
One of the best parts about moving slowly when you travel is that you get to spend more time in a place and you can kind of become the authority to other new travelers, right? So I was in Vietnam. I was in Hoi An, Vietnam for a whole month. And so, you know, when it's a place where a lot of travelers are coming and going, you know, every 3 or 4 days. So I'm an expert at this place. I know all the restaurants. I know which beaches are good. And somebody hit me up on Tinder to match with me on Tinder. And it turns out he just wanted a free tour guide. I took him to my favorite restaurant, which is really good food and, you know, at a low price. And I took him to the good beach because there are two beaches and one of them is really good. You know, I took him all around, you know, showed him how to rent a bike if you just want a daily bicycle rental and just ride around town. And he was from Germany. And I was like, wow, this is brilliant. So from then on, when I go someplace new, instead of being lonely or, you know, Oh, I don't have any, you know, anybody to show me around. I get on Tinder and I find somebody to be my Tinder tour guide. I call it the Tinder tour. I get the 411 on any town, any city.
I can't even. I love it so much. But are you finding that, but are you dating seriously? Like outside the Tinder tour guides, like, have you been able to have like love connections with people out in the world? Like, have you found dating to be a little easier or harder, depending on where you are, just as you navigate the world?
I've not found it to be easier. I move around pretty quickly. This town I'm in, I'll be here for 4 months, I think. And last year I actually spent 6 months in this town. But for the most part, we're talking about 3 weeks here, a month there. So no, I have not found it easier to make and to have like a real dating relationship with somebody. But if you're but it is easier to actually meet new people when you're new someplace, as opposed to just meeting new people at home, you know, where you go about the same routine. So meeting people is a lot easier when you travel, but I feel like developing a relationship with someone is a lot more difficult. So
why do you think that is?
Based on the way I do it, we're just moving. Everybody's moving from place to place really quickly. Even because there's a digital nomad community, but for the most part, these are people who are staying in a place just until their tourist visa runs out.
Okay.
So you're talking, most places will give you 3 months and that's it. So if you meet somebody 3 weeks before their visa runs out, nice meeting you. Maybe I'll see you in another country another day. So yeah, but actually meeting new people is much easier. My circle is a lot bigger than it would have been if I had just stayed home. But the relationships take more effort to navigate, because you know that time is fleeting, and you know that you're going to have to, is this a person that you're going to be able to continue a relationship with, and not just a dating relationship, but just like a friendship? Is this a person you're going to be able to continue a relationship with when y'all are on separate sides of the world?
Mm. Do you see yourself still living this lifestyle? I feel like you're pretty much committed to it. Are you looking to kind of continue to do this for the time to come? I feel like the answer is probably yes, but I would love to hear what your plan is.
You know what, Michelle? I have like a 5-year alarm that goes off in my head and says, okay, enough of this, you know? So that I left in 2015.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So maybe next year will be the year when I'll be like, okay, enough of this. I don't know. Right now I love it and I'm not quitting.
I feel like a couple years from now, we're still going to be talking about this. I've met many people like yourself. And there's just once you hit the year 5, you're pretty committed. Like you would have decided like 2 or 3 years ago. I'm going to be honest.
Probably. You're probably right. I'm keeping my options open.
I know you're trying to be nice, but I'm like, no, she's not coming back. I wouldn't. I love where I live, but I like having the freedom of a digital business. So for me, I'm not a digital nomad in that I really love living in Colorado, but I do like the same kinds of things that you're experiencing, like freedom of my day, freedom to build my own business, freedom to just work from wherever. So if I wanted to like leave and go to Mexico and I'm going to learn from you, I could do that. So I think what's really interesting to me about these, cannot believe I brain farted.
It's okay. Well, let me say that I know we do have different motives though. You said that we have similar motives, but we have different motives because I am team boycott winter.
I'm all, let's go snowboarding.
No, ma'am. They tell you as a kid, they say, you need winter, you need things to die out in winter so they can be reborn in the spring. But I want you to know that that's a lie, because I've been all over the place where they don't have winter.
I love winter, actually. It's
beautiful. Yeah, so we have totally different motives.
Yeah. So that cracked me up, by the way. It's so funny because I really like the different seasons. So for me, I get weird if it's always warm. I'm like, this is weird. But so you're working on your business and your brand and you're building this out. Mm-hmm. Are you attending conferences and like, how are you getting people to know who you are and what you do? Your Instagram feed is amazing, by the way. So I will be reading your posts on how you take your pictures. But like, how are you getting people to know what you're doing so that you can, one, just generate income and that kind of thing? Like, how are you doing this?
This is the year that I learned that content without collaboration is dead. You can't do it alone. So yes, so I put on my vision board to go to 6 live events, and I think I've hit 3.
Okay.
Maybe I might be 4. So yes, conferences and live events, and not just attending, but I actually spoke at my first live event. I spoke at Audacity Fest in September in Memphis, which is a travel conference for travelers of color. So that was amazing. Yes. So the idea of just, you know, go ahead and keep blogging and keep making YouTube videos and keep, you know, Instagramming and people will discover you just is wrong. It's bad advice. You have to collaborate with people, whether it's in person or online. And so this has been, so 2019 was a good year for me to start, and 2020 is all about collaboration. How can we work together? Because we have similar missions. Whoever, anyone who is interested in what I do, we have a similar mission, right? Mm-hmm. So you want people to be financially free, and you want people to have, you know, you're working on different streams of income for people. You've got money on the mountain, you know. I want people to be physically free. Quit your job, right? Basically. So we have, right? But there are people out there. There are, I want to say hundreds, but thousands probably of people out there who want the same, who have the same mission, the same end goal for our followers and listeners and readers and viewers. Mm-hmm. And this is the time that collaboration is really going to make a big difference. So that's how it's happening. It's not just because I'm like putting out nice pictures, but it's because I'm reaching out to other people too.
Do you find that in the travel space, it's difficult to collaborate? Like, do you think that people compete versus collaborate? What's your feeling on that?
No, but I'm small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. I haven't even hit 3,000 Instagram followers yet.
Neither have I.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't mean to call it small, but I mean, there are Instagrammers out there, travel bloggers and travel vloggers out there with hundreds of thousands and a million followers. So I haven't found it to be super competitive yet, but it might be because nobody cares about, nobody's checking.
But here's the thing. One thing I've really discovered is just by working the numbers, you really don't need a million people to make enough money to change your life, right?
No, that's right. That's
so
right.
I think that this is something that a lot of people, whether they are, especially in the online space, I don't want to talk about 9 to 5, but in the online space, people have to really understand that, there is space for all of the people creating content, mm-hmm. and that the amount of people connecting with your specific content, the amount of people that it takes to make you an income that makes a difference in your life, it's much smaller than you think.
That's right.
And I think that's the key that people, what was that?
If you have an offer.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. If you're just relying on Instagram posts to make income, then maybe you do need 100,000 followers. But mm-hmm. if you have a course or a book or a conference or all of those things, as you know, mm-hmm. you can make a living without being the person at the top of the apex.
Right.
And I think that maybe I happen to know a lot of people who've had that same mindset and have seen it work out in other people that they follow. And so, no, I haven't experienced a whole lot of competition. I've experienced people helping me. Probably twice a week, someone sends me something and it's like, you should apply to speak here, or you should, you know. So people have been really helpful. I think it's partially, I'm my mother's daughter, and I'm naturally like a little bit of a busybody. So if I if I see something that's going to interest you, I'm going to send it to you. Right. And so people feel more comfortable reciprocating. And it's been better than I would have expected.
I had a whole stream of thought as you were talking, because that was so good. And now I've just kind of brain farted, because that's how things go with these interviews sometimes.
I know. Well, tell me, are you having issues with competition?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No. In fact, what I would say is I've had the complete opposite experience. Part of the reason why I ask about the travel space is, since I'm positioned in the personal finance space, mm-hmm. what we've done there is, I think, very unique, in the sense that we understand that a rising tide lifts all ships, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so I am a part of a community called FinCon. It's where all the nerdy, like, money bloggers go to talk about how to market our content in that personal finance space. Mm-hmm. But one of the interesting things that's happened as that community has grown, and as the profiles of different people in that space have grown, we've also like these smaller communities and events and programs and projects have kind of spun off. Mm-hmm. And it's been amazing to see. And we will share things like how much we make with certain companies as freelancers. Like, there's a huge thread of transparency in terms of freelance writing earnings, how to make money with our courses, how to build funnels. Like, it's been, I've been very fortunate to be in that space. I've attended events in the travel space, and the things that I've noticed is that it's weird to me that travel bloggers still don't understand how to monetize aggressively.
Right.
What they're doing. They're right. really good at creating all this content and stuff. Like, that piece they've got down, but they still have this, like, weird, like, lack mindset about where the money comes from. Like, they're still bartering for everything.
Right.
And so I'm always a bit confused by this, because I'm like, your platforms are so set to optimize what you do, but there still seems to be a lack of a conversation on how to monetize what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, so I find it, like, weird, to be honest. Like, and it's been years of observing this. I have a website and podcast about Colorado that's kind of simmered in the background, which will not be simmering anymore, actually. And thank God, because I just found out that Lonely Planets ranked us in the top 10 places to visit in the world. Oh. So I'm like, there's content that has to be pushed right. out, like, that's ASAP. Right. But it's weird, because since I travel a lot and I know people who travel, and I have this website that's kind of, you know, in the travel space, I notice trends, and I consistently notice that travel bloggers to this day consistently, I think, underperform when it comes to monetizing what they do. And it just doesn't make sense to me.
You're right about that. I think because this is the only space I've moved around in, I don't know what other people, well, I see what other people are doing, but I don't really compare the two. So I haven't really paid attention to that too much, but you're totally right about that. I think that I get to be a part of some, by being a Black woman travel blogger, I get to be part of some smaller subgroups and sub niches that are being more aggressive and being more progressive. You're right. I totally see what you're saying. We travel blogging for the most part, they're like, okay, how many sponsored posts can I get? And Instagram sponsors can I get? Not, where's my book? You know, how's my live event going to come together? You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right about that.
So what's the next year look like in terms of business and travel? What are you up to?
So next year I am, So by the end of this year, House Sitter School will be in the books. I have a course on how to get started as a house sitter.
Ooh.
I know. I'm so excited.
Are you going to share a link with me, so that even if it's pending, so people can sign up?
Yes. It's in the packet that I'm going to send you.
Awesome.
The email that I'm going to send you. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm very excited about that. So next year will be about, like I said, getting more in front of other people, in front of other audiences, so that I can tell them about House Sitter School. And I had a great time on my 12-month gap year, but I didn't journal it. Mm. And so I'm going to take some time, follow your advice, write a book, which will be a memoir of that year. But it's going to take some more quiet, alone, reflective time.
Right.
Because I don't have any written content from that year, except for Instagram captions, which are surprisingly helpful. They are, because some days I just went in on Instagram and explained what I was feeling, what was happening, what was going on with me at that time. So it's, that will help. But so that book will come out in 2020 as well.
For those listeners who would like to connect with you, who'd like to purchase your course and just follow your amazing Instagram feed, by the way, how can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram, which I do love, Twitter and Facebook at Vaycarious, V-A-Y-C-A-R-I-O-U-S. My YouTube channel is pretty new, but it's got very helpful content. If you're looking for just pretty travel pictures, Instagram is the way to go. But if you want to know about taking a year off to travel or taking some time to be a house sitter on your vacation days, or, you know, seriously, come to YouTube. That's where the party is. YouTube.com/Stephanie Perry.
I actually want to ask another question. So you are building up this online brand. You've just launched a YouTube channel. How are you learning all this? Like, I'm sure there's someone out there who feels a bit intimidated by all the amazing stuff that you're doing. So could you talk about how you are getting the education to know what you're doing?
Podcasts. I'm a podcast junkie. Like, let's see. I'm pulling that up right now. So Amy Porterfield has Amy Porterfield has a very helpful podcast on online marketing called Online Marketing Made Easy. So in terms of fiction writing, you may know Joanna Penn, the creative pen.
No, but I will now.
British, uh-huh. But she is all in on making a living as a writer. Right. So she's one of my favorite podcasts for that. And then on YouTube, Roberto Blake is my YouTube mentor, who I don't know and who doesn't know me. But
he's a pretty big deal, right?
I think so. I didn't know he was.
And is he that African American guy? Because I feel like he was at our event last year that I was not at. So
Yes. He is. And he's a quiet guy, unassuming. But his information on how to get your YouTube channel off the ground, how to get people to watch, his information is extremely helpful. So podcasts. I listen to podcasts. I listen to you. You told me, write a book. You gave us, 13 reasons to self-publish?
Yes.
All right, I'm listening. I'll do it.
Yes, get that book done. And if you don't have the course, it's on sale this week.
Okay. Perfect timing.
$50 off. So definitely, because I'm going to shut that sale off on Wednesday of next week. So.
All right, perfect timing. Yeah, so podcasts, but I happen to have a lot more time than money, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have more money than time, maybe podcasts aren't the way. Find a person who has the podcast and then buy their course. Mm-hmm. And save yourself the hours and hours of listening through through their material. You know
what? I've done Google University, YouTube University. Like, I have been there, and I think that most people won't do the work.
Right.
I actually complain quite frequently to both my mom and to my friend, my other online influencer friends who have created courses and things like that. And I think that a lot of people way underestimate the amount of consistent work they have to do to move the needle.
Yeah.
They just really do. And I'm like, well, think about how hard you worked at your 9-to-5. It's the same thing, mm-hmm. but it's just self-driven. So, and my last question, where are you traveling to next year?
I don't know. So I am one of those people who likes to leave everything wide open. Ooh. Even though I just told you about how I planned a gap year and I knew exactly what countries I was going to hit and all that, I really prefer to just keep it wide open. I'd like to get to Ireland and or Scotland and do a nice trip there.
I was supposed to go there this summer.
Maybe next year. Maybe we'll do it together since we're friends now.
I know we are. We're besties. And actually, it is on my list. Well, we'll talk about that after the show. So
yeah, so I'd like to do some road tripping, Ireland or Scotland or both. And then I'd also like to road trip here in the U.S. to hit up some national parks. I've never been to Yosemite or Yellowstone.
Yellowstone is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in life.
It looks like it. It's so magical. Oh, it looks like it. Now, last year I house sat in the Bay Area. Ooh. And people were like, "Oh, you can get there. You can get there. You can, you know."
They're but, insane.
No, I don't deal. But it was winter time. It was it was mild in the Bay Area. Uh-huh. But there's no way I'm going to Yosemite in the wintertime. No,
that's a summer trip for you.
For me.
And even then, it might be chilly, to be perfectly honest. Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Yeah, I'd be okay with that, but not snowy. No. Yeah, so the answer is I don't know. It's all up in the air. I'd really like to hit up those places. But like I said, I'm a flight deal follower. So if something pops up, I'll go, even if it's a place I don't want to fly to, even if I don't want to visit. I got a ticket to Serbia one time for $200 round trip. I went to Serbia.
I was like... you know what? I used to date a Bosnian guy, and so I have some feelings about Serbia, but that's a whole other politically incorrect conversation. So we'll just let that one go. We're so letting that one go. But anyway, thank you so much for being on the show. I feel like you shared so many helpful hints and ideas. And oh, shoot, this is the last thing I need to ask you, actually.
Okay.
For someone who's doing their adult gap year and they're looking to they just want to do a gap year and then they're looking to come back home and get back into the job space, like they're perfectly happy, they're going to do a 9-to-5 or whatever. Do you have a tool or resource that you provide to help people with re-entering their old space?
I have nothing. That's a great question, but I don't have anything and I don't even have a good resource for it to send people to.
I feel like that's a resource you need to think about.
Yeah, I'm writing it down.
Because you've done it before, but I think that was actually on my mind a little bit before we got on here. I was like, you know, for some people like you and me, we're out. Like I quit in 2015. I'm not ever going back. I'm done. I'm not ever going back. Mm-hmm. And so like to 9-to-5 life, just never going to do it.
Yes.
But there are other people where they need that consistency and that continuity. Yes. And that security. And for them, I think part of taking this leap is once I leap and I've saved my money and I've had this year, what do I need to do so that I can smoothly re-enter? What do I need to anticipate in terms of like amount of time for applying for jobs? And like, I remember my last job, it took 4 months to get hired on.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 4-month hiring process. So I feel like that's another book for you.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's something that I hadn't thought about, but you're exactly right. Because it is a question that people ask me and I just say, I don't know.
You need to write down those questions they're asking you because those are books.
Yeah. Yes. You're right. Yeah. And that's how I came out with the idea of house sitter school to begin with, because people just kept asking me and I was like, oh, okay, well, let's make a thing.
All right. Well, with that being said, thank you, Stephanie. And I cannot wait to see all your pictures and just thank you so much for inspiring me and others and the listeners on the show.
You're welcome, Michelle. Thank you. This was amazing.